say you're building a commercial product at a company, think about the support you have around you. You have a PM, you have legal, you have marketing, you have HR and finance. And essentially that foundation brings that kind of that package to you to build and ship your product. Only your peers and your fellow team are distributed across the open source community.
Hey everybody, this week's episode is brought to you by Couchbase. Couchbase is an open source NoSQL document and key value store database. It requires no external cache, supports SQL and analytic queries for JSON data, and Couchbase supports technologies like Kubernetes, Java, .NET, JavaScript, Go, and Python. Download it today at couchbase.com/stackoverflow and let them know we sent you. Good morning, everybody. Hello and welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast. I want to say hi to my wonderful co-hosts who are here with me as always. Hi, Paul. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
It's going well. Sarah, I heard that you and your husband sometimes talk about going to outer space. Did you? Me and my wife have had that conversation
really?
At least 100 times. Oh, yeah.
Who wants to go to space, you or your wife?
I really want to go to space, and she's deathly afraid of going to space.
Oh.
And so we've agreed maybe, like for our kick the bucket thing, you know, when we're 89 and we've made it, we'll just go. When like, nothing
are they
to lose.
Looking for a lot of 90-year-old astronauts?
Yeah. No, they're sometimes they want to do different kinds of experiments to see what zero gravity affects. And I feel like, yeah, effects of zero gravity on the octogenarian is something I can imagine.
Yeah,
for.
That yeah. makes sense. Yeah. With us, it's I really want to go to, I applied for the Mars program. Elon Musk has this great quote that I love, and it is that he wants to die on Mars, just not on impact, which
right,
I think
right.
is amazing. And yeah, I'm the only one of us that thinks that's sounds
that
fun.
Thinks that's, yeah. I'm glad you have your seat reserved. Is it business class or did you spring for the full package?
Economy plus.
Nice. All right, great. Well, Sarah, you invited a guest on today, so would you like to introduce her and we can get chatting?
So our guest today is Robin Ginn. Robin is the executive director of the OpenJS Foundation. OpenJS is the parent foundation to projects you may have heard of, such as Node.js and jQuery and Electron and AMP and WebKit. So OpenJS has some exciting announcements, as well as an astronaut. Robin, I heard you talked to an astronaut the other day.
I did talk to an astronaut. The reason we reached out to NASA is we found out they were using Node.js for spacesuit solutions.
No.
So essentially,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It is. So we always say Node.js is everywhere. Well, it's even in outer space. So we thought that was pretty cool.
Sarah, are they using Stack Overflow in space? I hope so.
I'm just thinking of NPM installs kind of like going a little off and sort of what that could mean. So Your dependencies are a serious issue when you're sending them into the stratosphere.
Well, one of the questions we had from the community is, how do you do an internet search in space? Is there Stack Overflow in space?
What a good question.
You're going to have to like go back and watch the keynote from Christina Cook and see what she says about that.
Oh, very cool. We'll put a link in the show notes if it's up by the time this airs. That would be really fun.
So being an executive director of an open source foundation, there's a small handful of y'all or a large handful of y'all, but it's not something I think a lot of people know what that job is like. So can you talk a little bit about what you do?
Sure. As the executive director of the OpenJS Foundation, I'm a peer of many other great foundations out there, many under the Linux Foundation, but others from Mozilla to Apache to Eclipse, and even the .NET Foundation, Sarah, what you're a part of.
Yeah.
And I actually, when I got my job last year, I did reach out to many of the folks and learned a lot from those leaders and listened to them. And essentially, you are sort of that neutral home for projects to really sort of grow. And you work with your membership and you work with the community and really just try to be sort of, in a way, sort of the business organization around some of these open source projects, but in a neutral way.
Right. Because when you build open source or when you have an open source project, you, from the beginning, I've observed people are just kind of thinking about the code, and they're not thinking about one day we might need a nonprofit in case people send us money, or what happens if we get sued because someone is using the wrong license, or what happens if someone takes our name, or things like that you don't think about. But foundations seem to provide the infrastructure to bring that support.
Let's make the case and talk it through. So let's say I made a new text editor, and it uses a lot of JavaScript. It's all JavaScript. Maybe it runs inside of Electron, and it's got a zillion users suddenly, and my life is being destroyed as a result. Like, everyone's yelling at me and GitHub issues, and I've made 10 million mistakes, and I would just receive some money, and I don't know what to do with it. This feels like the use case for approaching and working with the foundation. So first of all, I don't even know what to do. How do I get in touch? What happens now? Coach me through this period of terrible growth.
This period of awesome growth, right? You should be excited for that. It's a good problem to have. So if you want to become a project, you work with our cross-project council. And just sort of backing up a little bit, if you think about open source foundations like OpenJS, we sort of separate into sort of the business side and the technical side. And then essentially that separates the technical decisions from the business and operations and perhaps the money and legal side of your project. Does that sort of answer your...
It does. Do I send an email? How do I... what's the initial point of contact?
Oh, they come in from all over the place. Sometimes folks reach out to me. Sometimes folks reach out to folks in the community. It's a pretty organic process. So what I do is if I get pinged or other folks get pinged, a few of us get on the phone and just walk the community leader or the project owner through the opportunities and benefits of joining the foundation. We then have an application that you fill out, quite easy, and then it goes to the Cross-Project Council, which is our technical oversight committee that crosses all of our projects.
What responsibilities do I have on the other side, right? Like, you're doing a lot of things for me. Like, if I'm going to be part of a foundation, what do I need to do?
So since we're an umbrella organization, we've really established it to give a voice to all of our projects. But the most important thing you need to do is to have an open governance process, which means you've really documented how you build it, how decisions are made, and it's all sort of in an open and a transparent way. So for example, if you go to github.com/Electron, you can check out their governance process. They have the build, they have security, they have community. They've really outlined how those decisions are made and the different pieces of building that technology. And so, for example, most of our decisions and meetings, they're done live on YouTube. You can go to our YouTube channel and check it out. Most of our projects do the same thing. Notes are documented, again, super open, transparent way, from roadmap to changes and things like that.
I want to throw it back to you, Sarah, because sort of your world is overlaps with this quite a bit because you work with the .NET Foundation. And do you, like, what are the differences between two different foundations? And I don't even mean between you two. Like, how did different foundations do things differently? And I know that's very abstract, but it actually is an indicator of how confused I am by this world.
Yeah. I think something that I've observed getting more involved in this world over the last year or two is that every foundation has its own, first of all, its own place in the life cycle. So different foundations, you know, there's things that they have in common, such as, you know, providing support for projects, working to help find committers for projects and things like that. But based on the community and the size of the community, there are different challenges. For example, in the .NET Foundation, we have a lot of projects. Our community is a little smaller than something like the Linux Foundation, the OpenJS Foundation, our membership community. And we're in the process of working with our members and figuring out how we can provide them value. Something like the OpenJS Foundation has been around a lot longer. The OpenJS Foundation used to be the JS Foundation, which used to be the jQuery Foundation. Did I get that right, Robin?
The OpenJS Foundation was the merger of two foundations, the JS Foundation, which used to be jQuery, and the Node.js Foundation.
Yeah, so that's all of those have been around for a long time. And right. So the infrastructure exists to have weekly meetings on YouTube and that level of transparency. I think something like the .NET Foundation, we have some of those things, but we're working to introduce the infrastructure that works for our membership so that they can feel like they're an active part of the foundation and stay aware of what's going on and things like that. So I think what I've observed about the different open source foundations is all of them have a different level of maturity. But the good thing is it seems like everyone's learning from each other.
Is there a foundation of foundations?
Yes, the Linux Foundation has become a foundation of foundations. Sort of one of them. And again, those executive directors have become essentially my peer group that I learn from and meet with. And so think about the LF AI. So LF is Linux Foundation. So we have an AI foundation. We have Hyperledger, which is blockchain. We have LF Networking and Edge, CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So
what were things like in the pre-foundation era? Like, was there a moment in time where open source software was a thing and there was a lot of people who wanted to be contributors? There were, you know, languages or frameworks that were popular, but there was no governance. And how did it work back then?
Let me give a dumb answer before these people give a smart
answer. Oh,
that'd
be perfect,
Paul.
Which
is you would FTP insecurely to prep.ai.mit.edu and download GNU software. And that was about it. That was how you got involved with open source. Yeah. Or you'd read Usenet.
Well, and, you know, I started doing open source at Microsoft in 2008, which was pretty early. But if you didn't have a foundation, sometimes we thought, gosh, how do we, you know, we have a pull request to make something work better on Windows. How do we get it in? Are we not in the valley? Are we not having beer in the right places, having beers with people? Like, how can we, you know, influence the direction of a project and contribute? And so without that transparency and sort of that neutral home, it was harder to do that.
Yeah. And I think what I observed too is there's a great talk, what is open source and why am I so sad? I think by Jacob Thornton. And it's all about, you know, a lot of people found themselves making open source projects, and which is great, right? Like, I built this software, I'm so happy people are using it. But then it quickly becomes, okay, now I'm donating my time for free. Okay, now I don't have time to do my job. Okay, there's this one guy in my issues who just keeps screaming at me and is really upset and I don't know what to do. What I've observed is that foundations really help with that, where that used to be the case. There's now places for people to go for support.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fascinating how much has changed and how much, you know, big tech companies that either previously opposed it or just, you know, were sort of agnostic about it have now embraced open source. I guess from your perspective, Robin, you know, how much easier does that make it to become a new contributor or just to exist in a community to feel sort of welcome and included?
You know, I hope it's much easier. We have, again, a checklist we talk about when you want to join. One of the things on that checklist, for example, is adopting the OpenJS Foundation Code of Conduct. It's, documenting your governance. And I wouldn't say they're templates, but again, we all do learn from each other in the open source community and just in the foundation world as well. So we do hope it makes it a little more approachable, right?
Do you think that there's something that appeals to engineers about having a set of rules that they can follow, even if they're not legal rules? I feel like something about like a code of conduct sometimes riles people the wrong way, but also like, give me the rules and the structures and tell me how, you know, it would be appropriate to interact with this entity. And then I can really get into it is something I feel like the engineering mindset kind of clicks with, right?
Just sort of across the board on some of our benefits, we hope it sort of removes some of the friction. And so then you can just focus on the code, right?
Yeah.
And writing great code.
I mean, that's the thing. We had years and years of people saying, no, being a colossal ass is actually critical to code quality. And then the codes of conduct showed up and everybody's like, no, you've destroyed everything with your horrible liberal culture. And like, I don't, politics aside, right? Nothing has changed. Like, everything seems to be better. And actually what's happening is that instead of one really loud ass coming in and blowing up your day, you actually have something to point to and go, whoa, we don't do that here. And that I don't think people realize, like, these are two-way documents. It's not just like you have to button it up, but like some random person can't show up and wreck your life because they're in the mood and they're upset that you used, you know, Perl instead of Python. Like, to that I don't know if people who weren't around watching this world can understand that was like 80% of open source development compared to the coding, and that that reduction in friction is actually fantastic for the community, right, and wonderful for like probably makes everybody happier and more profitable.
I mean, just like help me put it a little bit more into context. So we talk a lot about how, you know, within the engineering world, and again, I'm let's not pigeonhole engineers. They can be all different types of people with all different types of mindsets, but there is a lot of rules lawyering that they love. And I deal with that when interacting with Meta a lot, for better or worse, but right, like, they like to point out that we've agreed upon a rule and then be very specific about it. And so once you do get a code of conduct into place, maybe you have to fight to get it there. It's very useful because people, you know, will stick to it. They're very, you know, they enjoy following the rules as written down. Yeah.
Well, I would say there's a lot of people who use open source, but I think my experience has been with like kind of the core collaborators and the folks who are really active participants. They are sort of the positive, productive people. They enjoy working with folks from the community, from their competitors, from their partners. So I've had a lot of great experiences.
Yeah, we had Dries on from Drupal the other day, and it was really fascinating to hear him talk about like, yeah, some days I'm focused on, you know, just making sure that the 10,000 people who are, you know, trying to push and pull on this are, you know, getting what they need, and we're explaining the rules. And then other days I run the company over here, and it's like, wow, you know, you have to be a certain kind of person to be able to, you know, switch back and forth between like, this is a company where we make decisions at an executive board level, and this is a massive global open source project that I run where everything, you know, has to be very collaborative.
No, I think that the one thing I've observed is, especially when it's a lot easier to get involved too, when people are looking for a place to contribute. Often it can be overwhelming getting started in open source, but the more things that spring up like this, the better. You know, yesterday, this is a little bit of a tangent, but yesterday I was working with someone that is a friend that just graduated a boot camp that was looking to get involved with open source. And I went to GitHub and I went to the good first issue tag, and there is now a wealth of all these things, which is, I think, you know, partially to do with GitHub introducing this stuff, but also a really neat part of the structure that has come around open source for people that just want to get started. Robin, if people want to get involved with a project in the OpenJS Foundation, what do you think is the best way for them to get started?
There's a number of ways. If you go to openjsf.org/collaboration, there are several links. You can join our Slack channel to learn. You can add our meetings to your calendar. We are always welcome to be an observer at any of our meetings. We also, Giuseppe, who runs our cross-project council from IBM, he has open office hours every 2 weeks. So if you're just new and just have questions or ideas, Joe's always there to spend an hour every couple of weeks. But again, we meet weekly. Meetings are open. And, you know, this week we also had our collaboration summit on top of our conference. And our first day we had content all for new contributors. So you can also go on our YouTube channel and check out those videos as well from our community leads.
No, I mean, I think it's really worth it for people who are new to this world to understand you really can lurk. Like, you can go watch a meeting be held and you can see how people interact. And some of your anxieties are going to diminish very, very quickly when you realize that they are simply people like you who might know a little more about open source governance, and sort of how to code Node, right? Like, they might be a little further down the path, but you're going to be very aware very quickly that these are mortals doing mortal things. And when they say they'd like your help, they mean it. And so that to me is the power of the, it's not just being able to download the code, it's that you get to look inside of the world of software, and there's no industry like this. Like, if I really was fascinated by carpeting, I couldn't go suddenly into like the Open Carpet Foundation and see how they run their carpet. Like, we're having a big summit on Deep Pile this month. Like, that doesn't happen. And that to me is still kind of one of my favorite things, because I've lurked on video calls and conference calls and no one has known I'm on them. And I'm just like, let me figure out how people are interacting and communicating in this world. And then it turns into code down the road. But really, like, you owe it to yourself, if you're at all curious, to just poke around and lurk. And it's welcomed.
Very cool. Robin, this is your chance to say maybe where folks can find stuff. The conference has happened and was amazing, by the way. I can't believe you went into space. But if people want to check out some of the highlights from the conference, where can they go?
Just go to our YouTube channel or go to openjsf.org. I hope you all are following us on Twitter. the OpenJS Foundation and OpenJSF. But just on Paul's point, I'm learning all the time. Sometimes governance still is a mystery to me, but I think it's just human interaction. You know, you just learn on how consensus is reached on really complicated things, and it's a pretty cool thing to watch.
Very cool. All right, Robin, I'm going to read a lifeboat. So at the end of every episode, we shout out a lifeboater. That's someone who earned a badge on Stack Overflow. They have an answer score of 20 or more for a question that had a score of -3. So they came in and saved a question. This week, the question is how to declare a variable of type list parentheses string. Yeah. So thank you to Basarat for answering that. And that question was first asked 6 years and 1 month ago. So,
Wow. Hopefully you haven't been hanging out in the office since then waiting for an answer.
So Robin, if people want to find you online and you want to be found, where can they go look?
You can always reach me on Twitter at rgin206, Robin Ginn. You can always email me, rgin@openjsf.org. Find me on Slack. Join our OpenJS Foundation Slack channel.
Oh, very fun. Okay, cool. I'm Ben Popper, the director of content here at Stack Overflow, and you can find me on Twitter at Ben Popper.
I'm Sarah Chips, the director of community here at Stack Overflow, and you can find me at Sarah Jo on GitHub.
And I'm Paul Ford, friend of Stack Overflow, and I'm the co-founder of a software development firm called Postlight. Check us out at postlight.com.
Very, very cool, y'all. Robin, I just want to remind you that there are at least 36 other intelligent life forms in the Milky Way. That's a scientific fact. I read it in a science article. So just...
Yeah, which article? Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the name of the publication, but I'm sure it was legit. That's all I can say.
I'll check with NASA, see what they say.